Okay, so good evening all. This is Vera Krasniewski from Adiad, and tonight we're talking with Dr. Shana Friedman from Shalom Task Force. While all of us are dealing with Corona and COVID in all of our different ways, one of the most vulnerable groups are those who are quarantined with their abuser. So I want to talk to Dr. Friedman a lot about, firstly, what is domestic abuse? What are we talking about? And what we can do to help someone, if we can, and what possibly someone in that situation might be able to do. So just let's start off with defining what we're talking about.
Great. Thank you so much for having me and initiating this. It's such an important conversation. And as we were preparing, I shared that, you know, we don't have all the answers. But quite honestly, just having the conversation brings hope and support and awareness around the issue. So I want to put that out there that if anybody's listening, we might not have all the answers, but you're not alone, and we believe you, and we want to be able to help you. So I'm coming from, I'm the executive director of Shalom Task Force, and I'm actually a clinical social worker by training, and I've spent many years working with victims of domestic violence in all communities, but with a specialty working with both men and women who are victims, and both can be victims, in the Orthodox from communities based in New York. And it's always an honor to work with the survivors. They're really very strong and inspiring people. And I think that's something that we want to start with, and what Deborah started with, was really understanding what is domestic violence, because very often we think about domestic violence, we think about it more of what we might see, like what we imagine, the black and blue marks and this very physical abuse. And quite honestly, that's really not the whole picture. The whole picture is much larger. And to just go back to understand that domestic violence is really about a dynamic within a relationship between, primarily adults in our community, primarily spouses, that's about power and control. One person is obtaining, maintaining power and control over the other person. And they could do that in many ways. And physical abuse is just one of the many tools I talk about, the tools that the abuser will use. Sometimes it's emotional and verbal, most often, and that could be demeaning behavior, bad, you know, using very terrible language, threats. It could be sexual abuse within marriage, and there can be sexual abuse within marriage, financial abuse, using finance as a way of controlling the other person. We talk about cyber abuse, digital abuse, and that's something that we should talk about more this evening, where technology is used to control somebody. We talk about spiritual abuse, ways that halacha or a relationship with Hashem is used and abused to control the other person. The prime example is often withholding the get. But there are other ways that people will use religion. And I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, but we're talking about emotional, psychological, physical, and a whole host of abuse. So right now, we're talking about one of the main issues of victims of domestic violence is really the fact that people in this situation feel very isolated. And we're not relating that to COVID-19 yet, but in general, they feel very isolated, that they're alone with it, and perhaps the abuser is part of the abuse, will not allow them to have certain relationships and cut off their resources outside themselves as a way of controlling them, and they're very much alone. And we'll see in the typical, you know, kind of when it's not during a crisis, that is a dynamic that's often there where they, for whatever reason, don't have the relationships they did, and then when they're looking for help, it's hard for them to reach out. And here we are, I think all my colleagues and all my friends are sitting around, and we feel isolated, right? We're in this social isolation right now where we're being asked to isolate ourselves. And how is that for a victim of domestic violence who's living, who's currently hunkering down and in quote-unquote quarantine with someone who's abusive? And that's really, it's a frightening thought to all of us.
Definitely. So let's talk a little bit to someone who may be experiencing the domestic violence, being at home, mm-hmm. If they're able to actually join us in this call.
Yeah.
And that's something else.
So if you're, right. So that's, you know, when we talk about digital safety and just being safe, the idea that, and my years of doing therapy with clients in this situation, you know, we often have to find ways for that person to access therapy or even call me, right? Because that would be part of the control. They didn't have access to resources, or they'd be followed or stalked, right? So here we are in a situation where someone might be home, and really we want that person to be able to reach out and call someone and at least be validated and at least be heard. But if you're in, an apartment or even a home, right, and you don't have any private space, or the person's, looking at your cell phone or has access to your cell phone records or access to your email, and or your DMs on Instagram and knows who you're talking to, how do you make that safe? So first of all, that's reality. And so in the field of domestic violence, we do a lot of work, or we call it safety planning. And often people think about that as like, oh, it's an escape plan. But it's really not just an escape plan. It's really a plan. It's really a discussion about how can you stay safe whatever situation you're in. How is the safest you could stay? And right now, if I would be talking to, and I hope I am talking to some people who are in that situation and are here for validation and some hope and some clues, you really need to think about how can you stay the safest possible right now. I do want to say that, even during this crisis time here in New York or nationally, 911 is still operating, right? And it's a very hard call to make, but I need to put out there as a safety measure that if it comes to a place and it's escalated to that level, it is available to help you. But often that's not the direction people want to go in. So some ideas that we think about is how do you say the safest is, it's a very interesting balance, but can the person anticipate an escalation, right? Can the person anticipate it? Now, it does not at all shift the responsibility towards the victim, because they're not making this other person behave in this way. And that's, we need to be very clear about that. The person who's being abusive, the person who's hurting the other person, is responsible for their own behavior. But is there a way that they can anticipate it so that they could almost manage it and be empowered in that, right? That they could say, okay, I anticipate this happening. Is there a room that's maybe not be safe, but safer, right? So we know that kitchens and bathrooms are often not safe. It sounds very kind of, I don't know if you want to say that before, but like, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but like the truth is there are weapons, there's small areas. You want to make sure you're in spaces that are a bit safer. Are there windows that can be opened? Because what we know about abusers is that the accountability, right, helps with the behavior, right? It's not something they do to their secretary. It's not something they do on the street typically. It's something that they do to their intimate partner. So very practical things, that there's ways for it to be public, often that could help de-escalate the behaviors. So we're going to try to think very, like, just what are ways that they can be empowered in this really difficult situation to be a bit more safe. So those are some of the ideas that we do. When people talk to us at Shalom Task Force, when they speak to domestic violence social workers, another thing to do is if you have friends who are aware of your situation or kind of aware of your situation and you can't call Shalom Task Force, you can't call one of the other agencies, to have a code word, right? And we talk about that. It's like, is there a way that you could call them? And if you have, if I say it's really hot in here, they know it's escalated that really, really hard place, and they'll alert emergency people. There are systems like that that are important to put in place. I don't know that we want to go into like a lot of the safety planning, if we want to go in that direction, or just ways that people could reach out and kind of stay as grounded as possible right now. So we talk about physical safety and trying to stay as safe as possible in the moment, trying to feel empowered to figure out the triggers. We talk about ways that they could connect to other people, noticing patterns. Now, I would say, and one of the greatest researchers in this topic is a PhD nurse at Johns Hopkins. Her name is Jackie Campbell. And, she's talking now. What we do know is that when there's times of crisis in America, and we've never had kind of a pandemic like this, but we do know when we had things like Katrina or Sandy, where we know that when there's crisis around, DV survivors, domestic violence survivors, there's escalation of violence, but there's also usually a decrease of resources, right? Because we're kind of taking care of everything then that isn't the focus. And so we don't know how it's going to play out right now, but we anticipate that we're going to have, hopefully, please God, we'll go back to normal soon. right? That we anticipate there to be an increase of service needs, right? So that's something that we can anticipate. Now, but we do not think that people who are in marriages or healthy enough marriages, even like high conflict marriages that are not abusive, will become abusive. Like, the escalation isn't like from a healthy enough marriage and we're under stress, we're going to become abusive. The escalation may be, and what we're hearing on the hotline, the calls we're getting, is like it was emotionally and physically and verbally abusive before, and now it's becoming physically abusive. But the dynamic is not a new dynamic. I don't know if that's, you know, it's different than just right now. We're all stressed out and might be a little bit more snippy with each other or more frustrated with each other. And I say I'm guilty of that. It's really hard to be home this much and feeling this unsure and anxious. But that's a very different dynamic than the abuse we're talking about. We're talking about power and control. So I want to clarify that.
But even though it may feel the same to the one being hurt, it's still nasty words, and it's still, but it's coming from a different place. And does that land differently?
It's not about the action. It's about the dynamic and the fear. And when we're trying to make, and I'm not saying that people who aren't in high conflict marriages shouldn't get help and may choose to lose that marriage, leave that marriage, and that's their decision, right? But in a domestic violence relationship, there is the central, like the key indicators are the dynamic of power and control. It isn't fighting with each other. It's fighting at and power over. It's not, you know, it's not just fighting over something that's going on. It's not two people. The other part is that you don't have a voice. You can't yell back, right? And there's a sense of real fear. Now, I can't say that in a marriage that escalates, like will jump into being physically abusive, that's not abusive. That's abusive, right? But there's a fear component that's very different than in just a – I don't say just because I don't want to say anything's just. But in just a marriage that's going through distress or having a hard time, it's a very different dynamic than when people are fearful. And victims of domestic violence are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid. And they may have never been physically attacked. They may have been never sexually attacked. But they know it's a possibility deep inside. And they're frightened. They're very frightened. And that is – just you're dealing with a different thing where I'm not getting along with my husband. I'm going through a hard time. We're having a hard time, but we both own it, right? Or we're both taking responsibility. Or it's just very different. I don't know if is that clarifying. Go ahead.
It's that fear. It's that terror.
Yes, it's fear. It's terror. Yes, terror is a great word. Thank you. Terror is a great word.
Someone just put this in this question. I haven't heard from my sister. Now, we're worried about her. What should we do for her? What would be the wrong thing to do?
So let's start with the right thing, right? The right thing is, and I spoke about it before, and this is not only for COVID-19, right? The right thing to do is to remain connected. And that is often very, very hard. Because what I've spoken to a lot of family of and friends of, it is very frustrating, painful, and sometimes very hurtful and offensive that the victim, and you don't even understand what it is, isn't in touch with you, right? And you feel like sometimes it's like, well, why aren't they calling me? Or like, why are they being so difficult? Why aren't they helping take care of mom? Why aren't they helping with this? Like, and then if you take a step back and you realize they aren't able to because they're afraid, right? And you have to go, you know, you're talking about, it's not a 50-50 relationship. You have to go the 100% or the 99%. Because what that person needs to know is that when they're ready to do whatever they need to do, and it might not, you know, whatever they choose to do in that relationship, that they'll have, somebody will have their back. So in all these situations when we're concerned about someone and we kind of think, it's to just say, you know, I'm concerned about you, I'm here for you. And then keep calling, right? Like, I'm not talking about every 10 minutes, but like, just stay in touch. Don't let that person think that don't let the abuser isolate you. And it does sometimes really take Herculean efforts to do that because it is painful and it's hard not to have a mutual relationship, but that's what that person needs at that time. So in this moment, I'll say, you know, we're all getting our footing. Like, I'm in touch with a lot of clinicians right now. We're all trying to figure out, like, how do we deal with this? Because it's thrown all of us off because, you know, typically, you know, if someone's in an abusive relationship and they want to reach out to one of us, you know, the abusive spouse will go to work or go to Minion, and they'll have those moments that are quiet and they call us, or they go to work themselves and they have a phone there or they have an identity. I took a call right before this all started from, you know, a lovely woman who was describing, there has not been yet a physically abusive relationship, but there's a lot of verbal and physical, psychological abuse, and what she was fearful of going into social distancing or whatever we're calling it right now. And And she's like, but right now I'm okay because I go to work every day and I have my other identity and I'm able to manage, you know, this the balance between having a home like this and having a career and, you know, something she really feels good about and where she's affirmed. And, you know, she was really frightened about going there. And we talked about, right, like, how can you stay connected when you're in there? How can you create boundaries? So I'm going to go back to that. So what can you do for your sister? So stay connected. Give her a call. Send her a WhatsApp. Keep touching base. It's not a perfect answer. It is not a I can't say it's a perfect answer. Let her know we're thinking about you. You know, I was thinking about this before. Like, what do you do? I'm on, you know, some WhatsApp groups for the show I go to, and someone put up one of our little graphics, Instagram graphics, saying, you know, nobody deserves to be abused, even during quarantine, call. And even things like that, putting that out there, it lets people know that they're seen. Like, this is real. We as a community know it exists, and there is a place to go. It may not be this week. That might be the reality. It might not be possible this week. But you're not alone. So I would say keep on being in touch. You can't show up at her door right now. You just, you simply can't, right? It's medically dangerous, they're telling us, you know? And we can't do that. But to remain as in touch as you can and just let her know, like, I'm here for you. You know, and sometimes that might be, we might understand all of it, but it might just be, how was your day? What did you end up cooking? You know, what was it like to homeschool your four kids? You know, whatever your day is like, it's good for people to have connection because we want to combat isolation as much as possible.
If we really can't hear, actually, normally we would have a relationship with our sister, but we
right.
haven't heard from her in 2 weeks, and so now we're worried.
Have you? So the question is, have you tried to reach out to her? What can you do to reach out to her? Now, do I say send over the police? I don't think you should be doing that. In general, things that are not healthy to do unless it's dire is to take away the control of what happens next for that person. So you don't want to, like, make a decision for the victim because you're replicating the dynamic of power control and they may not be ready and then it doesn't work. So I don't have the right – I wish I could say this is what you should do. I think you should reach out as much as possible. I know in my family one of our activities every day is that we send letters. It sounds kind of funny, but I bought like a pack of 200 cards for $10 somewhere, like blank cards. And every day we're writing letters to people we can't see anymore, so call them classmates or to their my parents, my children's grandparents. You know, we miss you. And it sounds silly, but people love getting letters, and it is a statement to saying like the mail is still going, you know, and we're getting mail back now. So like. It's little things to make sure that they realize that they're connected to people and people notice that they're kind of missing and we care and we have you. That's what I think. I wish I had a more complete answer. I mean, I don't know if you have some other ideas, Devorah. I find you to be very wise. So.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I mean, again,
yeah.
It's very important not to make things worse. I think do no harm
right.
is very important here. If
yeah.
you can show up at their door, it
yes.
can make things a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yes, you're concerned.
Absolutely.
You might have to bite your tongue and tie
yes.
yourself down, but it's probably not best to go out there.
No, particularly now, but in general, it is not best to confront the abusive brother-in-law, to make statements, to be very – I mean, this is general. You know, you don't want to say someone, you have to leave, and if you don't leave, you know, I can't help you anymore. You have to be very non-judgmental. It is – the dynamic of living in a domestic violence marriage is so devastating. It is – it feels so hopeless at times. That if you are able to remain patient and be in that relationship, the anchor of hope and care and non-judgment and reflection and just concern. And it's a different statement to say, you know, I'm concerned about you, if I'm here for you, than saying you should be doing. You know, those are very different statements. You could always, you know, say, I know there are resources out there, and if you ever want them, I can help connect you. And I know, Devorah, you have a lot of resources on your website. Like, there are resources out there. None are perfect, but many are very helpful. And so to think that way, to really take that. And you know what? In those relationships, and I'm gonna you know, validate that for the siblings, right? That's sometimes so frustrating. It could be so frustrating and painful. But in that relationship, that's what you need to give in that relationship. And you'll get what you need, hopefully, from other relationships, right? In this relationship, you might have to be much more of the giver. And get the support you need around that. And I'll tell you, at our hotline, we get lots of calls from family and friends. We get a lot of calls like, how do I speak to my child? I saw something over Pesach when there that just concerned me. Or, you know, I'm concerned about my sister. Or there's a friend or a colleague I have that something feels off. And to guide someone through that. It takes a lot of patience. And, yes, do not confront the abuser. I would say don't get a Rav involved unless you really trust that Rav, because the Rav, I mean, from the best place may not know how to, you know, it's not a Shalom Bias issue. It's an abuse issue. Those are different. You really have to let the victim survivor be centered around that person's, what they're up to and what their needs are. So I want to go back to something. I feel like I skipped something here, and I don't know. We're talking about physical safety, but something I don't want to, like, leave. It's just in these situations, and I'm saying this to all of us, but particularly victims of domestic violence, it's really important to think about, like, just emotional safety, because we may not be able to make a huge change physically, so we stay as safe as possible, but emotionally it's important for the person to find as much as possible in the chaos of what our reality is right now, a way of grounding themselves. And a way of, you know, and whatever that may mean, for some people it could be yoga. For some people it could be taking a shower that's 2 minutes longer, and that's, like, just very comforting, right? Or you could still go for walks. We're still allowed to go for walks, right? So, to go for a walk. And you know, obviously if the abuse is very intense and it's not allowed, that's you know, we have to do things that are safe. But are there ways to have a cup of tea and just kind of soothe yourself in the moment to stay as safe as possible emotionally, because that may be what's available right now. And if you're listening, you're in a situation to, you know, I'm saying this over and over, but, like, to reach out to friends, and you don't have to talk about the abuse. You can talk about anything. But talking to other people and not being isolated is critically important.
So, Sean, this question also just came in about, I'm usually not home a lot, so I don't really hear my neighbors much, but now I'm hearing something that's very concerning. So it's a little bit different than a sister, but I'm guessing it's similar of, like, what not to do.
So don't knock on the door and start yelling at the who you think is the abusive spouse. That's certainly something you don't want to do. It's almost a strange situation because, like, I'd say in the typical thing where you can knock on people's doors, like, I think it's okay. I mean, I wouldn't say, oh, I'm concerned, I heard you fighting, but you could stop by. You could bring over, you know, you made an extra challah and just kind of say, oh, is everything okay? You know, this is right now. You can't stop by and say, oh, here's extra challah. Are you stressed out? But are there ways? So I think I said before, like, I was really kind of touched when someone else, a Mishal WhatsApp, I guess I should have thought about doing this, put out something that says if you're, you know, even in the situation, even in the crisis, you don't have to, you know, you don't deserve to be abused, call this number. Because it is a way of just putting things out there. So in a funny way, like the WhatsApp world, and I think most of us live in that, could be a helpful way of people feeling connected as much as you can. And I kept on trying to think, like, how do people stay connected now? We can't be within 6 feet. So are there ways in an apartment building to still kind of, you know, you could give a call and say, hey, I'm going crazy next door. How are you doing? And does that diffuse it a little bit? Are just ways to let the person know that they're cared about? Now, obviously, if you hear something that makes you afraid that someone's going to be, like, really physically hurt, you have to consider if it makes sense to call the police. I mean, that's always a decision you can make. And sometimes that is the appropriate action. But if it's, you know, that's a decision someone has to make on their own. But they're, to as much as possible, and I think it's one way that we all be ambassadors to this, right? Like, we do live in this social media kind of world where I mean, I think particularly now people are so on Instagram and WhatsApp and all this. That, I mean, Devorah, you put out this really wonderful, very poignant graphic around 2 weeks ago that said, like, daven for, right, say tefillah for someone who's quarantined their abuser. And it was very, like, oh, like, right. And I saw it on a number of posts, like, right, that's something that all of us have to think about. So we have to think about others, and then the person in the situation knows that people know it. And, again, not a perfect answer, but that's what I think we're dealing with right now. And, Yeah, I don't know if that
Because
completely
Shauna,
answers
something
it.
you said, and I think I want to like stress it, is that you at CHOM Task Force and other agencies also get calls from the family or the friends of or the neighbors of what you know, so for guidance. And
yes.
I think that we should never so a lay person who really doesn't know this should never really act on their own. They should always work with guidance from somebody.
Absolutely. Should always, I mean, Devorah, you offer guidance, I know, in the community you work with. We absolutely, I don't know the number, but I'd say 30% of our calls are not from the victims themselves. They're really from family members and friends asking, like, how do I say something? Do I give the person a book? Like, how do we do this? And I could say I worked previously at another local agency, Met Council, and a lot of our work was also like that. And in some way, that's it's a beautiful statement, right? Because we know the future for people is about being part of community, right? We want them to still feel included in community and still be able to be supported by what their community is. And so it does take, I mean, I don't want to use that like verbiage of like it takes a village, but it does take community. It does take friends and family for healing to happen. So absolutely, if you see something is happening, then call. We're open. We're able to help guide you. There are a number of agencies. We're collaborating around this time with Amudim. We've worked with them to make sure that they have longer hours of coverage, also help people with guidance. So there's a lot of places available. There are a lot of resources available. And even with, you know, all of us working remotely, we're working full-time. We have staff available. I don't have the hours right in front of me, but it's most days at least 9 to 8 at night, and I think sometimes till 10. You know, like, we're available. We're here. So nobody should feel they have to make these decisions alone.
Right. Now, one other thing that I wanted to mention, we once did a call with, I forget who, for newlyweds. And I just want to talk to that for a minute. I know it's not necessarily COVID-related, but...
Okay.
People may not realize what kind of situation they're in. So I know, like I said, it's not COVID necessarily related, but I just wanted to use this opportunity to talk to the newlyweds first.
I'll do my best. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. So when we're talking to newlyweds who, I mean, hopefully this doesn't happen to anybody, but it can start pretty early in the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are always told, don't talk about your problems to your parents or whatever it is. Shauna, can you talk to those newlyweds for a minute who are feeling like something is wrong?
Yeah, I mean, okay. So, first of all, we have cases within the firm community that it started in an engagement and in dating. Like, there were things there that were controlling, and there was that dynamic there, and then it escalated, and it'll be early in marriage. And we are taught, and it is a value of ours, and one that we cherish, is the sanctity of marriage, and that we're private, and we don't, you know, and it's not advisable to run back to your parents every single time you have a fight. But when things feel off, you need to find the support. So, the way we talk about it at CHOM Task Force is really, before you even start dating, right, is to have your resources, like, who are people in your life, be it a therapist, be it a well-equipped rebbetzin or a college teacher, and make sure that they really have some training around this, but people who could help be a sounding board, that if something doesn't feel right, that you could talk to someone. And our hotline serves with that. We do get calls from newlyweds. We get calls from people who are dating. We get calls from people who say, like, something's going on. I remember taking your class in 12th grade, 4 years ago, and something just doesn't feel right. I have, like, a red flag feeling, have that uh-oh feeling, and just talk it out. And it's critically important. Now, there is transition in early marriage. And not everything that happens is abusive. But again, we're talking about, and you people should, you know, there's a difference between the dynamic of power and control in the marriage, even if it's very low level in the beginning, right? And still having a voice, there's a difference between it being early abuse and just people having a hard time transitioning into marriage. Right? And can they get help? And they both acknowledge this is hard. And can they both take responsibility that this is hard? And can they get some assistance in it? And those are different. They feel very different. And so you would want to talk to someone who could help you figure out, is it someone just adjusting to this really hard? It is hard, and I don't know that we talk about that enough, but early marriage is challenging. Is it something that we could figure out together? Can we get the right help? Or is this something that's abusive? And then you have to make decisions about what you want to do. And nobody can tell someone what to do and how they should live their lives. But those are two very different things. And it's hard. That's hard, but it's critically important that you have the resources. You know, as a therapist and as a trained mental health professional, you know, I'm biased to say that it's probably a good idea, and I would highly advise talking to someone in the therapy world who's trained and who knows enough about domestic violence to help that person recognize it. Is it a dynamic of power control, or is it transition, you know, growing pains type of piece, and then what can you do? What are your options?
Thank you. I think that's really important, especially as the newlyweds are now kind of figuring out so much. That,
yeah.
Like I said, the transition, and now with this, and there's just so much. I really wanted to bring that up in general.
I mean, I can't even imagine. You know, you brought that up, like COVID on top of like being married last week. Like, yeah, there could be a very nice part about that, having like your own time and being very quiet. And it's also, that's a big, it's a lot of transitions at one time. It's a lot of isolation. And even if it means, even though I think most of us would agree you shouldn't go back to your parents to tell them about every fight you have with your new spouse, that's not advised, it does not mean you can't have a small group of people that you could be brutally honest with and get feedback. And even if you're in early marriage, you should still be able to talk to friends. You still need to have relationships outside your marriage, even in very healthy marriages. It's important to have relationships outside, you know, appropriate relationships with either, if you're a woman with female friends or a man, you met with male friends, but like you should have connection.
And Shana, I want to wrap it up, but I just have one other question.
Thank you.
We keep talking about like the man being the abuser, but I'm finding that it's not quite 90-10. It's like the number.
No, and I started with that, and I really tried to use like neutral pronouns a lot, because I think it's terribly dismissive to male victims when we think that all victims are women. Now, reported, I think the last statistics was like 93%, 89%. Like the reported instance of domestic violence nationally, that women are abused, 93% of the time. It's a really high. Now, that's reported. We know that domestic violence is terribly underreported. We also know that men underreport domestic violence because of all the stereotypes of what it means to be masculine, right? How can your female partner abuse you? I think at last look, I think 8 to 10% of the calls of victims to our hotline are men who are victims, and they'll be victims of physical violence as well. We've gotten calls of physically violent wives, so it is out there.
Hatsala has said that.
Yeah, and so I guess if there is a man or there's someone you care about who is, a male who's a victim, know that all the agencies I work with will work with male victims. We know that you exist. We know that you need help, and you deserve to be helped, and you do not deserve to be abused. And you're not alone. You're not the only from male being abused. We get calls. I've seen patients. It's real. And the dynamic can be very, very similar and identical. So it's just that, historically, and the research is based much more on female victims. And, I tend to think there's still many more female victims, but certainly there are a lot of male victims.
Yeah, and I don't want to dismiss it and make it like definitely a male on female, because it's not.
No, it's not. It can be female on male. It absolutely can. And people are always shocked when men will report that their wives beat them. But we get those calls. It's very painful. It's very painful.
It's all very painful.
It's all very painful. But by having conversations like that, I tell you, Devorah, like having conversations like this and just putting it out there and letting people know that there's hope. There's hope. We could find ways of people becoming safer. We could find ways of people getting into healthier relationships. And we could work to build a supportive community and a safe community. So I'm so appreciative And we're
people
here.
Don't have to do this alone.
Alone, no.
There are lots and lots of people who really care and really want to help.
Want to help.
And get into a much better place in life.
Place, yeah. And we want to be able to, and it should be, and do it at your pace. Nobody who's doing this is going to say, tomorrow you have to do it this way. It will be at your pace, the way you need to do it for you and your family. But we want people to know that there are people out there in your own communities that understand the many dynamics that we face living in the communities that we live in. And, you know, we want to support you. So,
Shauna, do you want to give you a website, Shauna Task Force website, and then I'll give the Adiyad website.
Okay, so we're at shalomtaskforce.org, and our toll-free number is 888-883-2323, and we are here for you.
And on the Adiyad website, we have a section for domestic violence. It's adiyad.org/end-the-abuse. And we have lots of resources there, lots of links, and we're always here. Definitely send an email, anonymous email to Adiyad. We don't have hotline. We defer to Shalom Task Force for that. But for those in the Quran Heights community, Chabad community, Adiyad can help you and try to find you the right resources or support you all along. So that's adiyad.org. And Shauna, thank you so much again for this call.
Thank you. Thank you, and Chodesh Tov, and it should be just a rejuvenation this coming month. We should all experience Pesach in a beautiful place of healing and freedom, and thank you very much.
Amen. Thank you so much, Shauna.